Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hi, Jackie. How are you?
I'm super. How are you?
Excellent.
So let's go ahead and introduce yourself a little and tell our audience who you are and where you're at, I guess.
My name is Todd Ulizio. My wife, Rebecca, and I own and operate Two Bear Farm, which is about 5 miles west of Whitefish, Montana. And we are currently on 65 acres with about 13 acres of that in cultivation for organic vegetable production.
Excellent. Okay, so the way I usually start out this show is we talk about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a little kid? Were you an adult? Who taught you how to garden? Or just tell us a little bit about your very first garden, how big it was, what'd you grow?
Well, I've been basically growing vegetables my whole life, not always by choice, but I grew up in Connecticut and my family had 2.5 acres of vegetables. And it wasn't necessarily a commercial farm. It was just something my dad really enjoyed doing. So my entire childhood up until I went away to college, you know, I spent a lot of my time, you know, out in the fields doing everything that was required. When I came out to Missoula to go to college, I studied wildlife biology. I didn't study farming, but I definitely missed that connection to growing my own food. So the first thing I did when I, you know, bought a little house in Missoula was tear out the backyard and put in a big vegetable garden.
Really? And, cool. Yeah.
And so then I built a little greenhouse, I made a big garden, and when I was sort of, jobs were lacking in the wildlife field, I think it was that, you know, renewed enjoyment of gardening that really led me to take the leap into thinking, you know, hey, I'm going to go start a farm.
And you did it.
And we did it.
All right, well, we're going to get to that in a few minutes, but my next question is, what does organic gardening mean to you? Because, you know, there's always kind of a little bit of a debate. So what does that mean to you?
Well, it's a big, organic is a big word, you know, and then being a farm who is certified organic, there's certainly, I mean, there's the legal definition of organic, but for a lot of people, I don't think they really care about the certification. They're mainly thinking of organic as, you know, this sustainable system that recognizes that soil is a living component of the farm, whereas conventional really doesn't make that acknowledgement. And so everything you're doing in organic farming, you are taking into consideration all the microbiology that's in that soil. And so you're trying to use, you know, non-synthetic type amendments, building your soil through organic material, basically taking an approach where your farm every year should get better than it was the year before, mm-hmm. rather than degraded.
I like that part.
And a lot of it too for us is at the end of it all, and what really differentiates organic and conventional for me is, you know, we're talking about food here. And so
exactly.
You don't want basically toxic chemicals on the food that you're ingesting. And I'm not quite sure how the American food system got to the point where we think it's okay to put these things on our food. Maybe it was just good marketing by the agribusiness community, but that's really at the end of it all. My wife and I want good food for us, and that's what we started out growing, but then we also expanded that to, you know, we want a good food for our community, and that's why we're doing things organically.
Certainly. Now, so who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques? Like, is that how your dad grew his garden back in Connecticut, or did you learn about it in Missoula, or how'd you get started?
Growing up as a kid, there really wasn't an organic movement. My dad just did what he grew up learning to do,
right?
Which he was really ahead of the curve. You know, we cover cropped every fall. We planted winter rye, and it grew over winter, and in the spring, you know, it would be plowed down as a green manure. But it wasn't called really cover cropping at the time. Mm-hmm. We hauled manure from dairies because dairies actually existed back then where we lived. You know, so we were using a lot of organic practices. We didn't use really any synthetic inputs other than there was some fungicide use because this is in Connecticut where it's a really humid, rainy environment. And I think that's what even organic farmers today, that's what they struggle with is like the late blight issues. So I didn't grow up chemically intensive farming, but I think as I got older, I studied wildlife and science, and I started reading about farming. It definitely just aligned with my philosophy on things. I always knew when I was going to start a farm that it was going to be organic from day one. You know, the thought of being a conventional farmer never crossed my mind.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And you, I know you guys did. What was your farm up here in Eureka, your first farm, or you worked on other, but that was like your guys' first one, right?
Yep. So when I was in Missoula, I actually worked in wildlife biology for about 10 years. But when I decided to make the leap into farming, I came up and I apprenticed at Terrapin Farm here in Whitefish. And she was also certified organic. And so that really gave me, it allowed me to see what a commercial farm does in terms of meeting organic criteria. The year after that, Rebecca and I started Ten Lakes Farm up in Eureka. And we did 6 full years up there before we basically outgrew that farm. And that whole time, Ten Lakes Farm was certified organic from day one.
Wow. So you talked about a whole bunch of things there that I'd really like to dig into because I think people are going to be really interested. Like one thing I really want to ask you about is your apprenticeship.
Sure.
Because a lot of the podcasts I listen to talk about doing an apprenticeship. They're more, you know, business ones, but they always tell people to reach out that way. So can you share a little bit about that for somebody who maybe is thinking about starting an organic garden and doesn't know where to start and might be interested in doing an apprenticeship?
Definitely. The benefit of an apprenticeship is it's zero risk, right? You're going to go learn what a farmer has learned themselves through trial and error, and you get to learn it all without making mistakes. There's no financial risk to you. And so it's a really good way to test the waters rather than just diving in yourself in year one and taking on a bunch of risk. You know, really all you're investing in it is your time. And I think it's a great step. The important thing is picking a farm that resembles perhaps what you want to do. So if you want to be very small scale or large scale, certain practices that you're interested in, it really makes a lot of difference to sort of vet the farms that you're applying to. Don't just work at any farm.
How did you find the Terrapin Farm?
There's a really great website offered up by ATRA, which is part of the National Center for Appropriate Technology, which is based out of Butte, but it's a national program. And if you go to the ATRA website, which is ATTRA, they actually right on the homepage have a map you can click on for apprenticeships. And so any farmer who wants can post an apprenticeship there. And that website sorts it by state. So if you click on Montana, close to 30 farms will pop up that have apprenticeship positions. And it only costs a farmer about $5 to get a day pass for it. And it's a really good program.
What do you mean to get a day pass?
Well, in order to post as a farmer, you know, you have to pay your $5 to put your posting on there. As an apprentice who's wanting to view that website, it's free.
Oh. Okay. And then you were talking about the benefits of zero risk and learning what a farmer has done, you know, and getting a chance to test the waters. Do you just want to talk about that just for a second at all? Like what it was like to do an apprenticeship? Because I know, I'm pretty sure you guys worked super long hours down there, right?
We did. Yep. And that farm.
Did you get any kind of a stipend at all or just your learning?
It really varies by farm. I think at that point it was a pretty minimal stipend, something like $200 a month and free room and board.
You do get room and board.
Yep.
And then how many hours, what are those hours like? Like what was a day like? You get up in the morning at what time? And
well, again, that varies by farm. During my apprenticeship, the apprentices were relied on really heavily to do the bulk of the work on the farm. And so we were typically working, you know, 10 plus hours a day, 5 days a week. And a lot of that, it all depends on the methodologies of the farmer. If they're doing a lot of hand weeding and hand planting, you know, some of that experience is a bit more tedious. You know, if you work on a farm where maybe it's a bit more mechanized, you know, it feels like less labor per se. I know on our farm, we use apprentices as well for the bulk of our labor, but we limit their hours a bit more, but they're still putting in 50 hours a week in the peak of the season.
And is that for you? You sign up, commit for an entire season, a whole spring and summer and fall, or
ideally, because the demands of the farm go across that whole season, and to have people leave or come in the middle sort of puts us in a bind. It's much easier to hire people during, you know, during the winter, take the time to hire people and have them commit for the full season. You don't really have time, you know, in the frenzy of the middle of the season to go find new employees to work for you. So that's the ideal case is to have a season long commitment.
And about how many apprentices were there at that time? Like 2 or 10 or?
The apprenticeship I did, we had 4 apprentices was all. A few came in and a few left. Our farm, same thing. We have 4 apprentices.
And that's to do your 13 acres, right?
Yes. Which is a lot of acreage for 4 people plus my wife and I. So 6 people total on 13 acres is definitely pushing the boundaries of what's reasonable.
Now, when did you guys start down there? Is this your first year down in Whitefish or your second year?
We just finished up our first growing season.
It was. Okay. Well, so tell us about something that grew well this year down there. Maybe do you want to just quickly tell our audience, like, Whitefish is at quite a high elevation, right? As compared to up here? Even though you're south of us, aren't you guys at a higher elevation? Does it make a difference?
We're slightly higher elevation, but it tends to just be more in the snow belt versus... It's not too far different from where we were on Terrialt Creek, but it's very similar to Fort Time, but not definitely much colder and much more snow than, say, you would get north of Eureka out in the Tobacco Plains. Mm-hmm. And even the Flathead Valley is, you know, Whitefish tends to be snowy and cold, and just a few miles away towards the center of the valley is very different growing conditions.
Mm-hmm. That valley's full of beautiful farmland, isn't it? I know my husband cries every time he goes down there and says they're building on all the farmland.
Sure. And again, it's Montana's unique in how many microclimates and even the soil. If you go to the east side of the valley by Creston, right, you know, there's endless topsoil. And if you're on the west side of the valley, you're lucky if you have 12 inches of topsoil.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Because that's where they call it the farm to market road. That's where all the farms
exactly.
are, right?
Farm to Market Road is probably some of the more marginal farm grounds in the valley. But it's also funny, the 3 biggest vegetable farms in the valley are also on in that area. So I don't know how you explain that.
Because that's where the trees are.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about something that grew well there this year.
Well, there was a lot of stuff. We actually had our best corn crop ever, our best winter squash crop, eggplant. Was a bumper crop. We couldn't get rid of all our eggplant.
Really?
A lot of it was fertility, I think. You know, we basically found out very short notice that we were moving the farm here. And we did the best we could to break the field out of basically a quack grass sod and try to turn it into a vegetable farm. And so there were definitely spots in the fields where we were able to get manure in place from Hedstrom's Dairy, Kalispell Creamery.
Oh.
Places where the manure was, things tended to do better. Places where we didn't get manure or we had some drainage issues, crops didn't do as well. But it was a good growing season. It definitely had a pretty quick end to it. In September, we got that freeze.
Yep, so, we lost almost everything this year.
Yep. And so, but fortunately the summer was hot enough and warm enough, you know, dry enough that things grew well during the peak of the season.
Okay. So how about something you're going to do different next year? which I suppose you have big plans that way. But
yeah, I mean, that's like every year we go through massive plans on what we're going to do better, what we do the same, how we're going to use the land. And we're sort of tweaking the system every year to make it work for us. Right now, I think really what we're trying to do is improve our rotations so that if we have a weed issue or we have a fertility issue, it's very hard to deal with that when you have such a short growing season and you have crops in the ground. It's hard to deal with fertility and weeds at that time. But if we can do better at rotating vegetable production entirely out of a portion of the field, you know, maybe expand the acreage that we're growing in, which is why we're now up to 13 acres, but keep a bunch of that in cover cropping and maybe manure application, we can better rest the land and deal with some of our issues rather than trying to do it all in one small space. It gets a bit overwhelming.
All right. And I just want to clarify for the audience, just in case they're wondering what he's talking about. When you say fertility, you mean like fertilizing the soil with, like manure and different things.
Yeah.
Nitrogen, like you were saying, putting the crops in.
Yeah. Fertility is basically providing the plants the nutrients they need to grow. And how you provide fertility, I mean, it ranges everywhere from synthetic fertilizer to adding manure to even turning in cover crops into the ground where the soil biology converts it to nutrients.
Okay, how about tell me about something that didn't work quite the way you wanted it to this year, this season, something that didn't go the way you were planning.
Well, we had like the worst strawberry crop ever.
Oh, really?
And it wasn't even strawberry production. You know, we planted many hundreds of strawberry plants, and they never did anything. The roots, they never died, but they just turned yellow and pale, and we tried to nurse them back to health for 4 months, and they never budged. And we didn't know if it was, you know, we do a lot of soil testing here. Mm-hmm. And we're huge proponents of soil testing because a lot of the issues that gardeners will see, a lot of the symptoms, you know, can typically be explained by a deficiency or an excess of something in their soil. And so what we've been trying to figure out is, you know, was we have this really high magnesium load. We have low phosphorus. You know, in Montana, we have cold soils. So trying to be the detective and figure out what exactly was it about where we put the strawberries that we could, you know, maybe improve going forward.
So what do you think you're going to try next year to make the strawberries grow better?
Well, we have two different fields, and the two fields are very close to each other, but they're also very different from a soil test standpoint. Mm-hmm. What we're going to try to do is try strawberries in the other field, which seems to have maybe better, a more balanced soil that might solve the problem right off the bat. Mm-hmm. So we're going to just plant them and let them do their thing and hope that that solves it. If we run into the same issue, you know, then we're going to have to dig deeper and figure out what exactly is going on.
Excellent. Okay. So towards the end of the show, I kind of talk about like harvesting and that kind of thing. But just before we go there, is there anything else that you really want to share with the audience that you think is super important that maybe I have missed since I'm still kind of new at this and not sure 100% what to ask? Like anything you can think of that you really want, you think they need to know?
Well, a lot of people contact us every year. I mean, they're hungry for information, but they're sort of overwhelmed by the amount of information out there. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what works. Montana is definitely a unique place to try to grow vegetables given our short season, cold soils. And so there's a couple of books I might mention. I know you had that in your list of questions, but
okay.
We did find one book that really sort of helped explain to people the importance of having healthy soil.
Okay.
And the name of the book is The Intelligent Gardener. And it's written by Steve Solomon, who was the founder of Territorial Seed in Oregon.
Oh.
And you can find it. I think you can buy it through Acres USA. I'm sure you can find it on Amazon. And it does a really great job at talking about the basic premise, it's the same premise that William Albrecht, the soil scientist, used to teach, which is you can't have healthy people if you don't have healthy plants, and you can't have a healthy plant if you don't have healthy soil. And it's basically that connection from soil to human. And it really, it's an easily understood book.
Oh, good.
And it's also the only book I've ever read where if you did a soil test, this book will teach you how to look at your soil test and actually come up with what you need and what quantities to use for any sort of amendment that you might want. A lot of books tend to stay too high level. They tell you you need all these things, but at the end of the day, they never tell you, well, how much am I supposed to put on and what am I supposed to put on? And this book does a good job at really explaining that.
Cool. Okay, so I'll put the links to that in the show notes. And then, okay, so then my next question is, do you have any secrets for preserving food or making it last?
We used to preserve a lot of food, do a lot of canning, mm-hmm. A lot of freezing. And we always struggle with the quality. We still can lots of tomato products, salsa and tomato sauce. But in terms of like freezing broccoli, vacuum sealing, we always had a hard time. You know, it was always really inconsistent. And so we've really moved towards, you know, the age old practice of root cellaring stuff instead of trying to freeze it. And so we grow a lot of cabbage and potatoes and carrots and onions and garlic. And for us, it keeps super well, especially in this climate where it's easy to keep a root cellar cold. Mm-hmm. And so that's really become our predominant method of food storage.
How about, do you guys do any fruit? Do you have like apple trees or anything like that?
No, we don't. I mean, we've always been in both Eureka and Whitefish. We're in colder parts of the valley. And, you know, it takes a while to get those trees established. And then the risk of frost, you know, especially early in the season at the blossom stage. Mm-hmm. We've never really tackled it. We would love to have it, but I think the success rate would be pretty marginal. And so when it comes to that, we just find other people we know who raise those fruits organically and you buy from them.
Cool. How about eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? That's like my biggest struggle point. It seems like everything comes on at the same time and then getting it harvested is hard for me. Got any suggestions for people to make that less of a pain point?
That's a good one. There's a book I read called Successful Small-Scale Farming, and the farmer pointed out like that is the most important goal of any farm or garden is to pick the food on time, because ultimately that's the point of the whole endeavor. One thing that I think really helps and that a lot of gardeners don't think about is planting things in different successions, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of planting 50 heads of lettuce on the same day, mm-hmm. right? Because they're all going to become mature at the same time. And what are you going to do with 50 heads of lettuce?
Right.
What we recommend is, you know, plant 7 at one time and then wait a week and then plant another 7 and then wait a week and then plant another 7. If you space out your plantings, you know, it doesn't always work because the weather plays a big role in that. And sometimes mm-hmm. one planting will catch up with another. Mm-hmm. But definitely doing multiple plantings of a given crop kind of helps spread that across the season. Then you can enjoy the food for a longer window and you don't become overwhelmed with it, you know, all at once.
Mm-hmm. How about any special techniques for cooking, like any kind of weird or unusual foods? Anything that you grow that's just not your average food you'd find in the store?
We grow lots of stuff. Most of our business is through the community supported agriculture, you know, CSA shares. And so when we give boxes out to people, there's a lot of times where there's items in there that they've never seen before, whether it's like a Romanesco cauliflower, sprouting broccoli, things like that. And I think it intimidates people, but I'm kind of a terrible person to ask that question because I cook basically the same meal all the time. I cook all my vegetables the same way, which is basically in a cast iron pan with a little bit of olive oil and garlic, and I saute it. I saute basically everything, greens, broccoli, cauliflower. I don't get too fancy with my recipes. You know, the quality of the food is so good. You don't try to mask the flavors. So that's a tough one for me. The other thing, I guess, is the internet is a great resource. A lot of people will ask us for fancy recipes, and I hate to say it, but all we do is go on and Google recipes, and there is a staggering amount of really great ideas out there on the internet.
Absolutely. I know. I look at my cookbooks anymore. I'm like, do I even need these? These could probably just go.
Yeah.
How about your favorite tool that you like to use in the garden? What could, like, if you had to be transported to some place and you had to start all over and you could only take one tool with you, what would it be?
That's a tough one. I mean, I'm
sort of, you just couldn't live without.
On this farm, I'm kind of the tractor guy because I grew up, I've been driving tractors since I was about 8.
All right. Yeah. Tell us about your tractor. What kind of tractor? How big? How small?
Well, we have lots of tractors.
I
think one of the best tools, which is, was commonplace in the old days, is the offset cultivating tractor. Something like a Farmall Cub or a 140. John Deere makes a 900. Kubota has a 245. And they are tractors that have cultivators, under the belly of the tractor. And the hood, the engine of the tractor, is offset to one side so that you can actually see what you're doing and what you're cultivating. And those tractors are very rudimentary. I think they stopped even making them about 1980, so they're all old. We have a 1968 International Cub, which to this day runs great, and we use it all the time. But using a little tractor like that saves so much time weeding, so much hand weeding, which, is basically the reason we've been able to grow the size of our farm. If we still did everything by hand, it would be impossible to grow past a certain point. Mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of people, gardening may not consider that, but I think it's sometimes it's important to remember, gardening and farming are very different things. A lot of times gardening is more for personal enjoyment and, personal supply of food. And when you get to farming scale, where there's more of, maybe you're trying to do it as a living, there's more financial pressure. There's definitely a need to improve efficiency and sort of streamline things. And so that's where we're at. We are basically a production farm. And so the use of tractors is really what allows us to do what we do.
Cool. We've wanted to get a tractor for a long time. We're getting closer. So now I know what to look for besides. Okay, how about a favorite internet resource?
Not anyone in particular, but I think what I would say is there's lots of information out there. Some of it's good and some of it's terrible. Whatever you read, I tend to look for sources that are, publications that come out of universities or extension offices, something where, the likelihood of it being correct is high. I try to stay away from a lot of the sort of forums and chat boards where you're just getting somebody's random thoughts on something, because that can get you into trouble sometimes. So I would just, cautionary tale, make sure you know the source and sort of critically think about who you're going to believe on the internet.
Cool. Perfect. All right. So just my last question, since you do have a business, do you have any advice for listeners on if they wanted to maybe sell some extra produce or get started in the industry? Any suggestions?
It's definitely, for us, it was easier. It's easier to enter into selling vegetables. You have to be a certain size. It's tricky to do it if you're just a gardener with a little bit of surplus. Maybe you can go talk to a chef or some restaurant and tell them you have a little bit of extra stuff. Or maybe you could go to a farmer's market just for the week. And a lot of farmer's markets will let you in one time only or just whenever you need to. That would be a good way to get rid of surplus. But if you really wanted to consistently sell stuff, you need to have a consistent supply. And that's what a lot of stores and restaurants require. Like, they don't want to buy something for you one time. They want to be able to buy something from you over and over again. And so if you're really going to go into that sort of business, you need to be prepared to maybe step up your production. You're going to have to be much more production oriented than you might be just gardening for yourself.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Todd. This was just perfect. I know our listeners are going to love it. And anything else you want to say? Any final notes?
No, that was great. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. All right. You have a great day.
You too, Jackie. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.